the time of the panic and the pandemic, there was no testing of Zika at all.
My guest today is Dr. Randall Bach.
Well, thank you so much, Tom, for having me. I'm thrilled to be here. I'm the guy with the Zika microcephaly debunk story. People, you know, our memories are short-term. We're, you know, TikTok world, you know, five-second videos and so forth. People may not remember the long ago, far back time of 2015, 2016, and what I call the before times. And there was a pandemic there. It was called Zika microcephaly. I went to medical school. I was awake for most of it, and I never heard of Zika. I did audiovisual, so I was being paid to be awake for part of it. So I have an excuse. Anyway, it turns out Zika was causing cases of microcephaly. Microcephaly means small head, microcephaly. And it's not a diagnosis. It's a qualification, like saying small person. I mean, you know, there might be tall people, or if you had an epidemic of tall people, there's not necessarily one cause. It could be a variety of things happening, ditto short people or any number of things that are signs rather than actual diagnoses. So I'm not an expert in this. I'm a regular general practice physician. But it was a puzzle to me when it came out in 2016. I used these actual identical fingers. I brought them with me. These are my Google fingers. So I searched the internet to like, what is Zika? And there, lo and behold, it's pretty much a dengue. And again, I brought use the same prop. There are four dengues and they're named one, dengue two, dengue three, dengue four. It causes a thing called bone break fever. That I did remember from medical school. Now, I had heard of dengue. And it's pretty much the same. And as Stephen Harrison is out of BU Boston, virology microbiologist, he posits that really Zika should be called the fifth dengue. So we would call it dengue five. I'm going to give it a thumbs up for that. So you can call it Zika, you can call it dengue five. So the four dengues emanated likely from Africa, and along with the Aedes aegypti medicine named after Egypt. And it either came to the Americas through the slave trade or, you know, sometime more recently. Now, we had no real way of knowing. There are no viral tests in the 18th century, 19th century, all that kind of stuff. So viruses came to be in the 20th century as a way of qualifying these things. And once dengue was you know, found in the Americas, there are literally 500,000 cases or more the last few decades in Brazil annually, and no increase in microcephaly. So if Zika is one of the dengues and the other four don't cause microcephaly, it seems odd that the fifth one does. Zika itself is not a human illness. It is a real virus, and I'll show you pictures of it. It may cause illnesses, but it probably to our simian brethren, maybe chimpanzees or something like that, also in Africa. It is named for the Zika forest in Uganda, which sounds like a deep, dark forest, but actually it's a piece of suburban Kampala. It's next to, Kampala is the capital of Uganda. It's, you know, a couple million people there. And it is right next to a Catholic girls' school, a hospital. It's pretty much like a park. So the Zika forest is not a deep, dark, jungly Uganda. And so it was known, it was discovered in 1947. And were there any cases of microcephaly in Uganda in the interim? Well, yes, of course, because microcephaly is a rare, you know, one in a, depends how you qualify it, you know, one in a few hundred or one in a thousand type of event. So obviously their case of microcephaly, did it cause any increase in microcephaly in Uganda in the interim? No. And as a matter of fact, there are very, very few cases of microcephaly. There's no association between Zika and microcephaly in Uganda for the 60 years before the Zika microcephaly phenomenon. And there are no cases of human illness from Zika at all in the literature. Frankly, until 2007, and probably that was wrong. So that's a little bit of the preface to this. Zika had never been seen in the Americas. Microcephaly is a very difficult thing to get right. I'm going to present some slides and show this. But that's a partial introduction. I'm going to give you one other interesting aspect before we kind of delve into the slides. There's a group formed in Brazil, I think in 2014 or so, by some epidemiology professors, virologists, physicians, and so forth in Northeast Brazil. And I like to point out to our American audience that Brazil's, this is not very technical, but somewhat upside down from the United States. So in at least on the East Coast, historically, the South is poor, hotter, darker skin, maybe a chip on the shoulder a little bit. The situation is the opposite in Brazil. They have their factional and fractional differences that played out in the last election. The North pretty much went all to the left politically, and the South is more to the right. South is more European, derived ethically, and the North has more Indios, more from the slave trade and whatnot. So darker skin, poorer, hotter area. So there were doctors, European descent doctors, professor level in Northeast Brazil. And in 2014, thereabouts, they formed a group called CHIK-V, the mission. And this is CHIK, it's C-H-I-K, it's for chikungunya. And so they didn't want to spell the whole thing out. So they formed a WhatsApp group, amongst other things, and they call it CHIK-V, which is chikungunya virus, the mission. And the mission specifically referred to the 1986, I think, maybe I'm going to get the year wrong. I apologize. But it's a movie, The Mission, Robert De Niro and Jeremy Irons. So big actors, American movie. And it takes place in South America, I believe, kind of Paraguay, Brazil, and so forth. And it's a battle between the colonials and the Indios. And the Jesuits, represented by Jeremy Irons, are in between. And so they took upon the mantle of this movie because the Jeremy Irons, the Jesuits, protected the Guarani Indians in Paraguay from the colonials represented by Robert De Niro, blah, blah, blah. And it's a big battle. I'm not going to go through the whole movie. But they see themselves as the protectors of the poor, downtrodden Indios. All an excellent thing to be, of course. But what they did was they wanted a virus to show up in Northeast Brazil. I mean, you have to, it's hard to believe this stuff. You have to, sometimes truth is stranger than fiction. So they formed this group on the hunt for chikungunya. They wanted chikungunya, another African virus, to be in Northeast Brazil so they could draw attention to the plight of Northeast Brazil and bring money and social equity and so forth. They were following the dictates of Rudolf Virchow, the 19th century German physician and pathologist, kind of one of the fathers of pathology, great physician, but he erred, I believe, in the same way by putting the cart before the horse. I don't think science and medicine work by having your conclusions in advance of the evidence. So Virchow's posit was that we should apply medicine to produce social change. So whatever we have to do in medicine, if it can make the lives of the poor better, that's all well good. I'm for that to a point. You should obviously treat disease such as it exists and maybe exists worse in poor areas, but you shouldn't necessarily have the medicine twisted to bring artificial situations about. I made this slide. It's a little bit busy perhaps, but we see over here in the left the comet. In a sense, a comet is bright, shines brightly, and then disappears. What we have here is a kind of an epiphenomenon. We have Zika showing up very briefly, and you can see as a search term on the lower right that it gets reported, and this is the United States. This is Google search term of the U.S., and all of a sudden it shows up with a bunch of claims. It didn't really happen here, it disappeared very abruptly. So what's up with that? Anyway, so here, getting back to what Zika might be, Zika and dengue fall into the category of flaviviruses. Flava means yellow. So these are yellow viruses, the name, not because the viruses are yellow, you can't really see color on a microbiological level, but they're referring to yellow fever. And it's yellow fever, you turn yellow, maybe it's a little bit of a liver thing, I don't know. Yeah, one of the flaviviruses is also hepatitis C, which may turn you a little bit yellow. But the arthropod-borne, basically mosquito-borne viruses, such as in this group, are banded in the tropics, are yellow fever, dengue, and Japanese encephalitis, and then, of course, Zika. So there's a dengue map over here, yellow fever as well. This is a map of Zika sightings. There's really not much going on. The early numbers of 1947 in Africa, you can see. And then there's not much else going on. Over on the right, you'll see 2007, it was a Yap Island event. This is probably a mistake. I'll get to that in a little bit, I believe. This is, again, using my Google fingers. Before 2014, there's really nothing going on. This is the total, the entirety of the literature on Zika. So there's nothing human going on about Zika. You can see the top article there, 1964 or so forth. So all of a sudden, there were Zika cases at a time of panic. And the green is South America. Pretty much this is just Brazil. There's very little else going on, and the numbers have gone down. I stretched this out to 2023, if you want to see the graph in context. So Zika has disappeared. It's kind of disappeared from our consciousness, all well and good, but there's still a residuum we'll get to in a little bit. So I love Sherlock Holmes. He whetted my appetite for reading. This is kind of the first extracurricular reading I did in high school. And I loved it. I read them all. And the thing that really stuck with me was the dog that didn't bark in the night. The inspector, thinks that's nothing because the dog did nothing. But that was the curious incident. The fact that the dog didn't bark implied that the dog knew the intruder. And so that made the case different. So I think that the spotting the presence of an absence is an important thing. It's a form of data in and of itself. And so here is kind of a presence and an absence. So the mosquito doesn't really know where it is. It doesn't have border guards. It doesn't speak different languages, different places. Brazil, the mosquito doesn't speak Portuguese, and it heads over to Colombia and speaks Spanish, or Guyana, and speaks English. It doesn't really know. It's in the tropics someplace. It's maybe sucking, biting pigs or whatever, other animals and so forth, then humans here and there. The number of cases of microcephaly was enormous in Brazil, 2,000 cases. Next door, in Colombia, 46 cases. And you see the graph on the right. This is the number of claimed Zika cases in yellow. And the tiny, tiny little bit on the far right is the confirmed congenital case associated with Zika. And so even this is kind of the tip of an iceberg that maybe are upside down. Mysteriously, only Brazil had significant microcephaly, even though Colombia had 100,000 cases of Zika itself. This is kind of a busy slide. This is just to point out Dr. Ko, who's the chair of epidemiology at Yale, my alma mater. He's kind of puzzled why it disappeared. People can stop and read this if they like. This is a complicated slide. Basically, on the left, you have this is after the fact, cases of microcephaly. Mothers having microcephaly. This is the serum, I believe, of the mothers. And on the right, you have controls. And one is led to believe that this blob is really different from this blob. And I'm not a blobologist, but here you have previous dengue infection. So this is the case, people showing immune serum to dengue and no dengue. So pretty much everybody in this area has had dengue. Mothers of controls and microcephaly cases. So everyone's had dengue. And they're trying to say that the rate of Zika antibodies is slightly higher. That's these little blips over here. This blob reaches up the wall a little bit higher than this blob. And they're saying that proves that Zika caused microcephaly. In my view, a lot of these studies tend to prove precisely the opposite. That could be a problem with me. Here is a picture, as such as you can do these things. Obviously, it's a recreation of dengue and Zika. We've seen a lot of pictures of the coronavirus, and we got used to spike, on our viruses, but not all of them have. Some of them, it turns out, are soccer balls. And Zika and dengue are both kind of soccer ball. They're icosahedral. Now, symmetry, I'm not going to get into that too much. And again, dengue 1, 2, 3, 4, and Zika. Not the spike protein, but one of the surface proteins on the right, we have dengue. On the left, we have Zika. And I try to put them together. And you can see, maybe I overdid it here, but there's not that much difference between the two. So let's get back to the ground. It's hypothesized that it spread out. And it would continue spreading out and take over the world. But as we went from our earlier timeline of Zika microcephaly or Zika itself, it has not. This should give pause to people who think that this is a real theory. Again, I stipulate that Zika is a real virus, microcephaly is a real syndrome. My only problem is that one doesn't cause the other. So here's one intuition that one might not be causing the other. So dengue has had a lot of confirmation. You know, you get dengue, you have bone break fever, but people are sick, they can do studies, and it happens and shows up where the mosquito is. So this is jungly Brazil on the left. That's where you get your dengue cases. Up here is pretty much urban northeast Brazil, and it's centered around, it's spelled Recife, but it's Recife. And that's where this happened. That's where the original clarion alarm was sounded. And that's pretty much where you're going to see your case. I'm going to point out this over and over again as we go on. Not only were there more cases of Zika claimed in the Northeast, but the rate per 10,000 births of having microcephaly, the Zika attributable microcephaly rate, was an order of magnitude higher in Recife, Pernambuco. That's the state of Recife. And other areas have the mosquito and the virus, as you can see in rural Amazonian Brazil, where the mosquito is, and people would get infected, say, just as much or more, but the rate is lower. So it's not cases of Zika. This is the rate. I'm sorry to repeat that, but it bears repeating. This is the panic. So when you see this, your heart cries out. You see the case. If something did this, now you would want to know about it and you'd want to take action. And people saw this and it became a huge, emotional public health cry. And it took the world by storm starting around, late 2015, but into early 2016. And mind you, the Brazil was having the Rio 2016 Olympics later that in our spring. And so this became an issue about traveling to Brazil and so forth, if you might catch this. And so if you had a disease that caused this, certainly you'd want to know about it. And on the left, you see the heroine of the story on the bottom left. That's Vanessa van der Linden Mota. And her mom on the sitting, that's Anna van der Linden Mota. Excuse me, Anna van der Linden. Vanessa's parents were both neuropediatricians and her brother is as well. She is. So they have a family affair going on. He is not in Recife, but the rest of them are. Her dad has passed. So what is Zika microcephaly? So this is according to their stipulations. It's in the jungle. The mosquito becomes a transmitter between domestic animals and or people. And then you're going to get a baby with small head size. But the penetration rate, the red circle there, is an interesting thing. The penetration rate is actually pretty low. So if something causes something, if A then B, you should see it on a repetitive basis. I'm going to have a slide about rubella later on, but that's German measles. If you are naive to German measles, first trimester pregnant, you get it. You always get rubella syndrome. And rubella syndrome is always caused by rubella, the virus. So that's a one-to-one identity function, not the case here. This is a complicated slide, but just to point out that nobody really knows what caused microcephaly. Again, it's like saying short people or something like that. Or, I don't know. I can't think of another good example. There are lots of different things that it's a multifactorial syndrome of something that's very rare. So nobody's ever really gotten to the bottom of this. It doesn't happen often enough to make, good case attribution. But most of the things, all the ones that are underlined are associated with poverty. The bottom one is not. Placental insufficiency can happen to anybody, but the other one is deprivation. Folate deficiency, malnutrition, disruptive injuries, along with probably certain toxins, alcohol, blah blah blah, drug use and whatnot. So poor living tends to be associated with smaller headed babies at birth. Not all of the small headed babies are going to be problematic. It really is only a problem if that is associated with diminished intellect, and there is an association. But not every baby that shows up with a small head is that. Some people are just small. This is an algorithm, again, very busy slide, I apologize, but this shows what you'd have to do to investigate microcephaly and find a cause for it. In a panic, this isn't done. This isn't done, it wasn't done. It was a panic. Again, similar type thing from a pediatric or neonatal book, all the things you'd have to do to make a diagnosis of microcephaly, primary, secondary. There's some an actual true microcephaly, a very rare congenital autosomal recessive case. And that, so that's true microcephaly. That's always going to be intellectually damaging. The other ones are on some sort of spectrum, but who knows? Here's a little bit of math. They said there'd be no math, but here we have a little bit of math. And so this is your Gaussian standard distribution curve. And the red is what Brazil was using, two standard deviations from the norm. And anything below that, they were calling microcephaly. So about, really, fairly, my number's wrong, it's really about 2.2% of all newborns, they were classifying as microcephalic just because. And this is all throughout. And mind you, while they were doing this, they never kept a record. They never had a registry of microcephaly. They weren't keeping any registry. So when people were claiming in HACCP in 2015 there was more, they actually had no way of knowing there was more because they had no comparison. WHO, the Euro Intergrowth Group, said three standard deviations. Now, three, two, whatever. Well, the difference is enormous. I believe it's 17 times, something like that, fewer cases when you use the more stringent determination. And we're going to go through some slides very quickly here. This documents that, in fact, they were doing this. And you see in the upper right, this is the cases they would use under the standard they had at the time they were calling this a pandemic up to December 2015. Then when the world, the WHO kind of came on the scene, they're like, oh, dudes, you are using the wrong standard. So they clamped down and they came down, mind you, they should have clamped down even harder, but they wound up with the 178 cases. They dropped down immediately the case from 602 to 178. So that's not a cure. That's basically using better math. And then when they wound up using the correct standards, they had the estimations would have gone down. Again, busy slide, I apologize, but the criteria matter. And so your huge pandemic up in the 600,000 number there where the arrows are, I'm trying not to use my mouse to do it with the slide moves. But over here, these numbers would go down vastly when using the correct standard. Again, busy slide, but you know, the actual number would have gone down to 30,000 if, in fact, this was Zika microcephaly was happening. But when you look across the board, the number was fewer than 3,000 total, not one, but 3 years of the greatest scrutiny in 2015, 2016, 2017. So there was probably not an increase in microcephaly in Brazil at that time. Let me repeat that. There was not an increase in microcephaly cases in Brazil at the time of the panic and shortly thereafter. The mosquito is an equal opportunity biter. This is a kind of a poverty map of Recife. The white central area is the wealthier area. So it's inverted, again, a little bit inverted from the United States experience where the suburbs are wealthier. In Europe, a lot of times in South America, the central part is richer and the outskirts are poorer. And so the black areas have the lowest income, and they have the red dots are cases of microcephaly from that panic era. And the white area seems to be preserved. Now, you could argue that people are in wealthy areas. They don't encounter mosquitoes as much. There's poor sewage, you know, things out on the street, water collecting, so forth. Okay, fine. So that's a possibility, no doubt. But people were not aware as much to stay away from mosquitoes prior to the Zika microcephaly announcement. So this is, again, busy, you know, these are kind of excuses being made. This is Dr. Marquez, who's from Recife. He's in Pittsburgh, as well as Brazil. And he's pointing about, like, why, the cases showed up in poverty areas. It could be a variety of things. It could be immunologic background. It could be other infections you've already had, making you susceptible. It could be stress during pregnancy. All these things are associated with poverty in some way. No, it could facilitate the virus to cross the placenta. I claim this is begging the question. This is a Patitio Principi error. He continues to stipulate the virus. Now, you don't need the virus to have higher cases of microcephaly in the poor areas. The slide I referenced above shows that you have a lot of other things that cover it. Everyone is wedded to the virus Zika virus causing this. And once you take the virus out of the equation, you have just as good an answer whether it's there or not. And nobody seems to be able to see this because, frankly, it is, you know, an income stream for microbiology, virology, and so forth to have Zika exist and a panic and so forth. It costs the United States taxpayers $1 billion, and we haven't fully spent it yet because the problem went away. We'll get to that later. This is a study from Brazil showing there was probably a higher baseline of microcephaly than they knew, but again, they didn't have a registry before the microcephaly panic, so they had no way of knowing. A lot of these kind of recreation studies, they don't get the same play that the panic did, obviously. This is kind of a dengue slide. I bring up what I mentioned before. I'm not going to spend much time on this, except to show that there have been, at times 600,000, 500,000 cases of dengue noted, probably higher numbers in people who don't get themselves tested and don't necessarily have severe breakbone fever. And again, no increase in microcephaly over the duration. This is, again, too busy a slide, but this is how you would have to differentiate Zika from dengue in the lab. This was not done at all. There was no such thing as a Zika clinical test in 2015 or 2016 Brazil. It had not been made yet. Maybe later in 2016, but at the time of the panic and the pandemic, there was no testing of Zika at all. I could repeat that, but I think you get the point. So if you wanted to do it well, we saw that those series of blobs. You see there's a huge overlap between Zika and dengue in a with serology, and it's probably because they're not different from each other. It could be people do get Zika. It could be Zika was in the Americas all along, and nobody bothered to differentiate it from regular dengue because it doesn't cause symptoms. It doesn't really matter to me. That's kind of a difference without a distinction without a difference for me, whether Zika is new to the Americas or not. It doesn't cause human illness, and it doesn't cause microcephaly. This is emblematic of the panic. I just point out the light blue line is the southeast, which is pretty much Rio and Sao Paulo. They don't have Aedes aegypti mosquito there. They didn't get Zika down there. And yet they had an increase in number of cases of microcephaly. That's panic. The other places had the same type of panic at the same time, and they had the same increase and probably from the same panic. This kind of goes over how this, is a little bit of a better map. I took two different studies. I combined them here. In mapping and the middle bar, the part with all the borers, you can see that this is again the rate, not the case number, the rate of microcephaly claims and confirmed claims are all higher right around what I don't want to misname it, but we'll call it ground zero of the panic. This is Northeast Brazil, where Recife, where this showed up as a problem to begin with. And on right, here we have a map of the mosquito, again, not knowing borders. So it didn't know it should do the same thing in Colombia. It didn't know it should do in Venezuela. It only knew to do it around Recife over here. That's odd because Recife is not the highest density of mosquito and of dengue, which is, jungly areas. So you'd kind of need a mix of having the jungle, mosquito, and people to get sick from it for us to notice it. You could have the jungle with no people, you're not going to notice. This points out kind of the stature difference between the north and south. Again, the north has shorter people. We could have made this slide upside down to have the north on the top and the south on the bottom, but this is a little bit confusing here. But this is Rio de Janeiro, Sao Paulo area, and they're taller because they're more European origin. This is kind of a easier way to look at this. This is the more population dense area of Brazil, again, more European-ish, and this is the area, this is why the CHIKV, the mission group got formed. They were trying to help the poorer, hotter, darker-skinned areas of Northeast Brazil. Another problem is that this actual graph used in Brazil for measuring baby head size was based on the Northeast, on the South, taller, larger birth circumference, head size babies from the south, southeast, from the European areas. So they had another discrepancy here before they normalized their charts for the local population. So, but moreover, if you have a little bit of prematurity, your baby will come out with a head size over here at this gestation date. So unless you clearly correct for predicted birth date, gestation, age of delivery, so we're, you're going to get it wrong. You're going to wind up on the low end of this and be miscast as microcephaly when you're just premature. Busy slide here talks about some of the biases that would be there, and we'll try to get to that in a little bit. So this is the, again, they didn't have this retrospective study in the Zika year in 2015. But if you go back, when they start to go back, they went to Panaiba, which is next door to Pernambuco, and they did a kind of a general hospital, which dealt with probably poverty population a little bit more. And they found, you know, cases of microcephaly here and there, but nothing really extraordinarily different in the 2015 year from prior. Here we have my rubella slide. I mentioned it earlier. If you do have rubella, you pretty much get rubella syndrome all the time. So the rubella is nearly 100%, about 80%, maybe more than 80%. Rubella syndrome, deafness, cardiac malformations, is, as a tough word here, pathognomonic, which means that it's sort of a one-to-one syndrome. You have that, that is rubella. It is diagnostic for that. And it pretty much occurs all the time if you are naive to the virus. So that's what I call a one-to-one identity. Now, Zika at its hypothesized worst was only 4% penetration in naive pregnant subjects. So that is to say, you're a woman in Brazil, you never had Zika, by your first trimester pregnant, you get the virus. Only one out of 25 of those women would come down with microcephaly, supposedly. And again, that's in the essence of panic, when in fact that's not something that's occurring. While congenital microcephaly has dozens of other causes. Okay, so here's another complicated slide, not busy so much as complicated. This is from the New England Journal. And I'm going to take out the part about Guillain-Barré. That's the part in purple, because that's really not relevant to this. So I'm going to see if I can wipe that out as best I could. So what you have here in bluish is Zika infection. So they're saying 2015, there was Zika, and it's followed up by this purplish microcephaly. So they're saying, oh, Zika, microcephaly. So Zika, and then you get it, and then you have your pregnancy, and some number of weeks later, and 23 weeks later, you have a burst in microcephaly. So that's what happened the first year. So they're positing that this is going to happen, this dotted line would happen the second year, 2016. Okay, so here's Zika showing up once they had a little bit more testing. They didn't have real in the field clinical testing, but they had, the laboratories and the hospitals and so forth, the research, and they were probably finding more Zika once they started looking for it. So they're saying more Zika in the succeeding year. They don't really have seasons as much as we do. So it's a little bit of, kind of the wet season, dry season, but it's tropical. And lo and behold, what happened? Well, this is the red. This is what microcephaly did. It didn't do this huge Matterhorn mountain over here. It actually did. This is what they're predicting. This mountain. But lo and behold, this is what they got in the arrow. They got microcephaly. Boom, back down to presumed baseline. And again, I pretty much believe that this speaks to panic. This is. And cops, we didn't really talk about the derivation of who and why Zika was announced in April. Again, I don't use seasons there, but April 2015, it was determined that some cases of mild dengue in Camaçari, which is outside Salvador, on main the capital of Bahia, which is a little bit south of Pernambuco, Recife, a doctor. Actually, a married pair of researchers in Bahia, Dr. Gubbio Suarez Campos and his wife, Silvia Saudi. I'm going to take the slides off to talk about this, but we'll come back to this. They decided that certain mild dengue or allergy cases in the hospital, they took some blood. So they never examined the patients. They took some blood. They had an old primer sitting on their shelves given by a guy from Senegal some years later. had not been tested by Brazil's FDA, whatever. No, they tested some blood and they came up, they said, oh, these are your Zika cases. And they announced it to the press. They didn't go through peer review. They didn't make a study. There was no reason to announce this except, in my cynical view, for self-aggrandizement. So they announced to the world that Zika was in the Americas for the first time. My supposition is that these doctors were part of that CHIKV, the mission group. I can't prove that, but they were in contact with those doctors. But what was the cure for it? He was actually asked in the newspaper and TV, why is this important? What do people have to do about this new announcement of Zika? He says, well, nothing. If you get it, it doesn't really cause any symptoms. If you get some symptoms, take Tylenol. So why this had to be announced as an emergency and subvert go around the existing university research establishment, I have no idea. He did get a better job. He's in Buenos Aires now, and he announced on Instagram he's the discoverer of Zika in the Americas. Acipe, a few months later, there were more local cases from the doctors I mentioned, Dr. Linda's and whatnot, of microcephaly, but no prior data from which to compare it. So this happened. I'm going to try to get maybe into more detail if you have questions about this. And then a doctor from part one, from the CHIKV, the mission group, happened to live in Recife, part two, and he saw there were more cases of microcephaly. He heard there was new Zika, and he decided A causes B, and then he started telephoning some 30 or so mothers of cases with microcephaly. I'm going to maybe stop sharing the slides here to kind of get out of this. Anyway, this is Dr. Carlos Brito. This is my telephone prop. This can do anything. So he started calling the doctors, the mothers of microcephalic babies, having their own sort of tragedy, whatever, and asked them a series of questions. Did you have any fever, rash, or chills early in the pregnancy? So now that the babies are X number of months old and the pregnancy was, at least 9 months, whatever, about 9 months. So he's asking people, 7, 8, 10 months, whatever, later, after the fact, if they had had any of those symptoms. Now, mind you, this is a tropical area. Fever, rash, and chills during pregnancy. I mean, I'm pretty sure my wife had fever, rash, and or chills during pregnancy. We don't have Zika over here. I think this is a very silly thing. Anyway, if you answered yes, he said, oh, that was Zika. And again, as above, as with the April 2015 case of finding Zika in the Americas, this was announced to the press. I don't know if Carlos Brito announced it to the press, but it was announced in the press in Recife, or Recife. He was in Recife. He had done this study. He had made the connection. He had frankly been brought in to consult with the Van der Linden doctors. And it was off to the race at that point. This is based on no prior data, no Zika tests at all. They didn't exist on Earth, maybe some other planet, but I don't know, alternate universes. But as far as Northeast Brazil or the United States or any place, there were no Zika tests, clinical tests to be had. He did a retrospective study. Clearly, there's confirmation bias, there's selection bias, there's authority bias, and bias in doing such a thing. And that was the alarm that got everybody going, and then a big wave of overdiagnosis. So I'm ready to come up for air a little bit, but there are some other interesting aspects. So we'll see where it goes.
So he did not even call a control group of 30 mothers who didn't have unusual babies.
Good question. I don't know that. I have sent him some emails. I can put that in as a question. He has not been rather forthcoming since my more later emails since I've written the book. But my understanding is no. That's a good question.
What were the biggest negative effects of this panic on the people who lived in that area?
Well, panic. Panic's not that good. But once the panic happened, this became a major news item. It was the single largest medical news item of 2016. The WHO called it a PEHIC, a public health emergency of international concern. I would posit that there's been a huge negative mood. You know, the Chick V. the Mission doctors, you know, but I forget where this road goes, but there's a place that the road for good intention goes. And you know, they wished this upon, they got their wish, not with chikungunya, but with Zika, far above and beyond what they could have hoped for from chikungunya because of the microcephaly component, which they would not have been able to predict. So they just predicted the Zika, you know, the chikungunya part. Having the microcephaly gave the Rudolf Virchow hypothesis huge wings. So they got money, attention, panic, and so forth. But as it turns out now, if you read, I was reading a recent article about Salvador Bahia, the birth rate is down quite a bit. And it's down the most it's ever gone down in recorded memory. People are leaving the city. It's stagnant. There was probably, you know, a little economic burst with some of the money coming in to those areas, but it has dropped off. Well, obviously, there's, you know, more recently, there's coronavirus, which is its own story of possible, you know, genuine virus, but exaggeration of claims. These don't do well by people. People suffer. I can't speak to, you know, person by person. If you were a young family trying to, you know, young, you know, couple trying to start a family, all the missing brothers and sisters, my supposition, it's easy to document. There are hundreds of thousands of missing children in Brazil. I would stipulate that worldwide, 500,000 to 1 million more ghosted children who don't walk and live and breathe amongst us now because of this fear and this exaggeration. Women, I think, stay indoors during pregnancy more. They slather on insect repellent. These are hot places where, you know, it's tough, especially if you don't have air conditioning, to stay away from any potential mosquito. I think it's just one more kind of ill-conceived, inappropriate fear layer onto the world. So I think that always takes a psychological toll. So the one last part is that our benighted, our brilliant but potentially benighted experts, I use the term advisedly, from WHO kind of swooped in to the Americas and elsewhere and tried to convince the ministers of public health or in general tell their populace not to have children at all. So this was never formally declared anywhere, but in El Salvador, Jamaica, the announcements were made to stop having children. And mind you, from the graph we saw from the Washington Post, these are places did not have a burst in microcephaly at all. There were certain states within Brazil where the public health minister said the same thing. It was not a national dictate. But along the way, so I'm not a conspiracy guy, but I do believe in this thing called a conspiracy of interest. Once something happens, then people, I don't think necessarily they made this thing happen. I don't think the people who wanted abortion constraints to disappear in Latin America, I don't think they made Zika. But once it was there, and once they saw it was a congenital issue potentially causing microcephaly, they wanted emergency overturning of any abortion constraints in Brazil. So they went to the Supreme Court and they went to all these state courts and so forth, and they were clamoring for immediate across-the-board abortion. Now, mind you, this is a problem that was not across the board. Not everyone was exposed to Zika. And even if you were, the rate of having microcephaly was vanishing, you know, very slow, a couple percent at worst. And all of those cases weren't necessarily cognitive damage. Some of them were just smaller children who could be turning out very much normal. So there were very little data, pretty much no good data. And yet this became a major kind of NGO topic. And a lot of attention and money was focused towards a legal battle to get at for what the, you know, pro-abortion kind of, you know, NGO world sees as their own ground zero for the stricter abortion constraints on Earth, which is, you know, previously or currently Catholic Latin America.
Do you think there still is a dream right now among some to get 1 billion people vaxxed against this using mRNA technology?
Well, it's funny. I want to get to the second part first. Funny you should mention mRNA. So people might have heard of this term mRNA. You know, don't shoot the messenger, RNA. Bill Gates in 2017, I wish I'd put this in the book. I saw this only later. I don't know how I missed it, but he offered $100 million to Moderna to make so that they would, when they're making a Zika vaccine, use an mRNA platform, which had never been done. So he wanted the mRNA platform to be mass tested for the Zika vaccine. So, you know, people in the tropics, far away, whatever, they would be getting this new mRNA platform through Moderna. Sound familiar? But, you know, the funny thing is that the disease, as it were, or the syndrome or the coordination between these two syndromes, Zika and microcephaly, or a virus and a syndrome, did not cooperate. So when we formed $1 billion, you know, money cure in Congress in September 2016, 45%, you know, essentially half was devoted towards the creation of a Zika vaccine. It involves a famous player here, Dr. Fauci, who admitted to, you know, basically he called it borrowing. I call it stealing money from actual medical causes. He announced that he was taking money from diabetes, cancer, and other illness research, arthritis, and whatnot, to devote to Zika, to put the pressure on Congress to pass a Zika funding bill. I think that's malfeasance. I mean, if I did that running a company, if I were running, I don't know, even Enron or whatever, I would probably be arrested for that. But so be it. And there was some pressure because of the abortion aspect, because there was a Republican Congress at the time. They didn't want to willy-nilly fund the abortion movement, and when that was going to be one of the modalities to combat Zika microcephaly. So there was a little bit of, you know, playing with the language, but eventually by September 2016, it passed with Fauci's urging. Now, mind you, Fauci by that time knew that Zika microcephaly as a phenomenon had disappeared, because they really had only had this kind of epiphenomenon in 2015. And when they started looking beyond the winter winter of 2016, they didn't see any. So by September, it had been long gone. But did he say that to Congress? No. Over the years, this money has tried, they've been trying to spend it. There was one little problem, because the NIH and Walter Reed Hospital had made a study, an ethics panel. They probably spent $1 million of our money, but what's a million? Forming an ethics panel to answer the question, should we inject and infect people, humans, with Zika in the effort to find a Zika vaccine? So that was a very simple question. It's called an HCT, human challenge trial. Should there be HCT in the pursuit of a Zika vaccine? So I'm going to show you the deliberations. This is kind of micro version. Okay, so they did that for what, some number of weeks. And they said no. They said no. The answer is no, don't do it, because Zika, I mean, again, stipulating Zika caused microcephaly. They're all in the mindset it does, fine. So even if it does, they said not worth it, because Zika as a virus is preventable, because you got mosquito netting, blah, 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 get rid of mosquitoes, literally drain the swamp, not figuratively, but literally drain the swamp, and you shouldn't get Zika. So there's no reason to start injecting people, because they've been burned by the Guatemala and Tuskegee aspects, where, mind you, I think the Tuskegee experiment, I'm going to go out on a limb here, was actually a reasonable experiment to begin with. It was done at the all-black, historically black college, Tuskegee. And the problem was that they, mind you, the black researchers, you know, African-American, you know, kept, they were doing the study, and they kept some people in the dark after penicillin had been invented. So at the beginning, there was no penicillin. It was a reasonable study at the beginning. But the problem was that they didn't tell people after the fact. Anyway, they've been burned by that. And so they don't want that. They don't want to be in the middle of that. So Dr. Fauci, as 2018, I mean, 2017, no Zika microcephaly, and really no Zika to speak of. 2018, no Zika vaccine. All the original money that spent, you know, literally hundreds of millions of dollars in pursuit, pretty much with Sanofi, Takeda, and Moderna, no Pfizer, in trying to develop a Zika vaccine. But the problem was, there was nobody, you know, there are no control groups of people actually getting the illness upon whom to test. So they went down to Brazil, where they tried to coordinate with Brazil's FDA. It's Anvisa, A-N-V-I-S-A. And they basically had, you know, $100 million or more to invest in a Zika vaccine human challenge trial, give people the Zika virus and then watch and wait, test the vaccine and some of the blah, blah, blah. And Brazil said, thanks, but no thanks. You know, it's not an issue for us. I'm not sure what their words on this is my, you know, fictional interpretation, but basically they turned down the money. And this is, again, going back to the Chick V, the mission group, the money was the purpose, the equity, all that kind of stuff. This was the purpose, the attention. They were getting it. And Brazil said, no, not enough of an issue. So what did they do? I mean, this is while the ethics panel said, don't do this. But Fauci's quoted in a Science article in 2018 by John Cohn that, you know, basically we kind of see this as an issue that might come up. It's important. And we still have to do this, blah, blah, blah. And so what we have done is we have transmuted that, you know, plus a few years in 2021. And currently, Dr. Anna Durbin of the Bloomberg School of Public Health at Johns Hopkins has NIAID money and NIH money to do this. And they are literally injecting and infecting women, young women in Baltimore with the Zika virus. And then in hopes of getting a Zika vaccine. So that's going to be part A. And then part B is there's going to be one. There's going to be a Zika vaccine. It's not quite warp speed. And whatever you think about the Zika vaccine for corona, it was literally, well, it was figuratively much closer to warp speed than the Zika vaccine has been. And I think that, you know, I'm not an anti-vaccine person. I've taken dozens of flu shots. I've given out thousands of vaccines over my life. But I think there's a right time for each of these things and a right person and so forth. There's no real right time for a Zika vaccine if Zika doesn't cause microcephaly. I've been in communication with Dr. Durbin through email, and she has, I'm going to miscast this. I'm going to put a name to it, but basically she has what I call locust theory. You know, locusts supposedly come every 17 years, they come out, and otherwise they're quiescent. They got to wait for the plants to regrow, whatever the reason is. I'm not sure how deeply they think about this, but if they come out and there's no, you know, cotton or whatever to eat, then there's nothing there. So they wait till everything regrows and then they devastate. But in her case, she's going back to this 2000 study from Yap, which supposedly posited that some dengue cases, which had been on the island, were actually recast by our CDC after the fact as Zika. Again, see above, very difficult to tell one from the other, and no, you know, distinction without a difference, because who knew? Period. She's saying that was a case of a burst of Zika, and then 2014 was. And so therefore, every 7 years or so, there should be more cases of Zika microcephaly. Therefore, it's timely because we don't know the next one's going to happen. Could be, you know, within the next couple of years. I think each of these are hugely problematic. I have an article in the American Journal of Medicine called Investigating the Zika Microcephaly Crash, which, you know, you can find the link to the Yap thing. And I kind of take that apart. I think it was poorly done. It's after the fact, and there was no reason to do it. As we've seen above, I don't think Zika might cause microcephaly in the first place, and whether it's there or not is kind of, again, immaterial because it's a non-human dengue. I don't know. That's sort of the current issue. My feeling is, and I have no reason to doubt this, that there will be a Zika vaccine. As soon as it's in hand, it's going to be put out to the world, and probably in the tropics first, and maybe young family age first. It'll probably be given to men as well as women because they all stipulate that you have sexual transmission and so forth. And then it'll probably be done for children, and then it'll probably be done on a regular basis, and you won't know how long it lasts. It'll probably be done every 3, 4, 5 years, blah, blah, blah. And then why not do it to the whole world because you might travel to the world. I see no reason why there won't be a worldwide Zika vaccine tagged onto this. And why is this an issue? Well, because there already is a dengue vaccine. It's got the lyrical name Dengvaxia. And this was, I believe, produced 2009. It wasn't put into wide usage. But in this kind of same time frame, it's had its own problems. In the Philippines, there was a huge backlash to Dengvaxia. So there weren't quite riots, but huge protests because Dengvaxia was causing ADE, antibody-dependent enhancement syndrome. So there's enough dengue around there, tropical areas, jungly, so forth, that people have kind of a background of dengue. So you start giving this anti-dengue vaccine, and your body's already seen it. So you're now producing kind of like not the spike protein, but whatever the equivalent is for dengue, and you're getting a reaction to that. So it's stimulating stuff, not quite like the rheumatic fever kind of thing after streptococcus, but you're basically getting your own I'm not going to go on a limb and say autoimmune, but it's like that. You're getting kind of a self-immune response that's not necessary, and so forth. So, you know, for dengue, probably the best thing to do is mosquito, prophylaxis, and most of that, again, literally draining the swamps and whatnot, urban areas and whatnot. You don't see huge dengue problems on the public health. The other, you know, deleterious aspect is the thieving, not just like as Dr. Fauci did from diabetes, cancer, and other research here, but on a public health basis, if we do care about the tropics and the poor areas and we want to be our best Rudolf Virchow imitation within limits, we're taking money away from malaria, tuberculosis, HIV, where the money should be. We did this during coronavirus and we did it prior during Zika. So having, you know, this money going more to vaccines is a different approach from what the sanitarians of the, I believe, late 18th, early 19th century, Chadwick and whatnot, Britain proposed, which caused the greatest public health leaps of all time, which is, you know, good sanitation, better living, better standard of living, and all that kind of stuff. So the best public health measure is getting the population wealthy, happy, working, so they can build and buy cleaner places, better sewage, all that kind of stuff. All of these things where we kind of work towards the vaccine theory and don't really, and mind you, keep the population a little bit of hazard and fear and whatnot. This is not helpful. It's not good for their mental health and health in general. So I think it's a lot of it's addition by subtraction, or what subtraction by subtraction, and going through this kind of, you know, if you want to be conspiratorial, kind of this regulatory capture loop of the pharmaceutical companies get kind of a sinecure, license to print money with their new vaccines. And this one is going to be, you know, unverifiable, unfalsifiable, because Zika has not been doing any microcephaly. It hasn't been in the microcephaly business probably ever. And if it was, it disappeared very promptly in 2015. And nobody's talking about it. WHO, well, I've emailed to the entire 2016 Zika emergency coordination group, which is a bunch of MD, PhDs, and, you know, people, professors, whatnot. I've not got a single response back. So I think they need to be jarred awakened to the fact that this is, you know, they should read my book, basically. It's called Overturning Zika, and they should get on the ball, because this is going to be a thing. This is my, Cassandra moment. There's going to be a Zika vaccine. It's going to be given to everybody. No reason for it.
Very good. This is a wonderful stuff. I thank you for taking the time. Where else can we find your work besides in your book?
Let's see. You can find it scattered on my desk, or at least on my desktop. So I have a website, randybok.com. It's B-O-C-K. I try to spell it just like my dad did. So I have a website there. It's not the best website on earth, but you can find a lot of my stuff there. I'm on X as Dr. Randall Bok, Dr. Randall Bok, spelled like this. I try to talk about all kinds of things I know nothing about. I do have my own video cast series. So I've had great, great speakers on. I probably do about one or two a week. I've had Dr. Bhattacharya, Dr. Bell, David Bell, Aaron Cariotti, Richard Amerling. I've had Heather MacDonald, Jeffrey Tucker, a lot of luminaries and great, great people, Justin Hart. I could go on and on. Daniel Kotz and Jennifer Say, great people in the basically in the COVID resistance, what I call like the pro-freedom, pro-breathing movement. Well, I'm happy to have you on as well. It's been a great awakening. I mean, the silver lining inside our dark cloud is that all this kind of Zoomization has enabled people to get out and be friendly and find not necessarily their physical friends close by, who have spurned me and some of my ideas about kind of relaxing about COVID. I think that's a real virus. I think it's a real flu level virus. So where I just don't think the world need to be upended for it. One of the other people I had was on Sanjeev Sablok, who actually gave me the sanitarian idea. And he has a great, great, great mindset and speaking capability. He was on my show a couple of weeks ago. I recommend people look at that. So where else can they find me? I live in the Boston area. I'm open to chat anytime you like. And that pretty much covers it. So my book's on Amazon. It's actually coming out in Brazil currently. I always get the title slightly wrong, but it's basically a translation of my book, Overturning Zika. I think it's Desconstruyendo o Zika. Sorry for the pronunciation. I'm hoping I have a Spanish version as well, so I'd like it to be published everywhere and anywhere, especially in the tropics where people are concerned about this. And I'd like the message to get out. One last point. When people were on the lookout for Zika causing microcephaly, again, I think they're two separate things. The real issue is whether it's Zika microcephaly, not whether Zika exists or microcephaly is a thing. But Zika-related microcephaly, in 2018, Rajasthan, India, they were completely on the hunt for this. So they found Zika, and then they were waiting for the microcephaly burst, and they did not see one. So insofar as you could do an experiment like this, which is hard, but you'd have to do population-level experiments, they didn't find one. And nowhere else where they've uncovered Zika since have they found microcephaly. Whereas all the major, you know, thinking experts and so forth, they keep not being able to see this. I don't know how to convince people. I have watched the Three Stooges as a kid. I'm not recommending what Mo does to Larry and Curly, but you know, I don't know, maybe figuratively at the very least.
Very good. So on that note, I'll let you go, but thank you for all your work. It's very interesting stuff. Randall Bach, thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Tom. Right. I appreciate having had the opportunity, and I wish you the best of luck. I love your shows, and I'm happy to repost them and have you on mine as well.
That sounds great. Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.